You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina, powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches.
Well, hello and welcome to the cycling podcast Femina, or should I say, g'day everybody, because...
No, don't.
This
please don't, Rose.
Because in this episode, we're talking all about the World Championships that were, of course, as you know from my wonderful accent, were in Wollongong last week. So, g'day, Orla.
My goodness, I thought we were in Summer Bay. Never mind Wollongong. G'day, mate.
And g'day, Lizzie Banks.
G'day, both.
We're getting worse. I'm really sorry to anyone who might be listening down under. We're not claiming to be any good in any way at Southern Hemisphere accents. Rose, you look really offended.
Speak for yourself, Orla. Come on. People actually used to, with my normal accent, people used to think I was Australian. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know why either. Doesn't...
People, yeah. Apparently people from South London quite regularly get confused with Aussie people, but maybe that's just me.
Maybe you can just do your normal accent
I will stick to it now. But none of us made it out to Australia, actually. But I mean, Ollie, you were working the whole thing, obviously. Probably, what time did you get up in the end to be on and ready for the World Championships?
Sneakily, I got up earlier for the women's race than the men's race. I thought I could afford to miss a bit of the start of the men's race, so I got up like 45 minutes later. For the women's race, I got up at 3 a.m. and I was getting ready already by the time they rolled out of the neutral zone. So I was very proud of myself for that, actually. Lizzie, did you get up bright and early? What did you do?
I got up and watched the last 2 hours, which I was quite proud of myself for, because I'm not a morning person, so I was up at 7. But no, it was worth it. It was a good timing, because the action was quite backloaded and the last hour of the race was absolutely on fire. So no, it was a great race. Glad I got up for it. The men's, I got up thinking I'd get the last 2 minutes and I missed it. I was about two minutes after the finish of the race.
But probably the men's race.
Can I say that I didn't really miss much?
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
Definitely the action throughout the week was really in the women's races. So, but I mean, that's nothing new to us here on Femina,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, the men's race, you would have had to have turned up early to have seen
And then
anything.
You could have gone back to sleep again race. And missed nothing, to be honest.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, well, that's not the only race that was on last week. So, Orla, give us your news roundup. Let's find out what happened elsewhere.
I will indeed. And we haven't even announced, the winner of the women's road race. It's not like we're unveiling, opening an envelope. I think everybody probably knows by now it's Annemiek van Vleuten. But I'm going to start with one of the superstars of the week, Zoë Backstead, of course, the women's junior time trial, first of all, the reigning world junior champion, completed an unprecedented quartet of titles at the time across four different disciplines by winning the time trial by the biggest margin ever seen in the junior ranks at the Worlds. I saw that on social media, so it must be true, I reckon. She won by 1 minute and 36 seconds. And I'm going to continue with the junior results because Zoë deserves to have her results shouted from the proverbial rooftops before we get to the senior women, because she retained that road title again, I understand, by a bigger winning margin than has ever been seen in the juniors, this time 2 minutes and 7 seconds, having attacked from 9 kilometres into the race and then essentially going on her second time trial of the week. Zoë was the only rider to come away from Wollongong with two rainbow jerseys in her suitcase and will be the most anticipated rider to arrive in the senior ranks when she makes her World Tour debut with EF Education TIBCO SVP. She was also largely responsible for GB topping the medal table at the Road Worlds. Did we all notice this? I hadn't noticed that.
Did not. No, not at all, actually.
Well done, Lizzie. Somebody's awake. Yeah, GB topped the medal table remarkably. It was the most successful ever Road Worlds because her two goals were joined by another junior gold, if I may be so bold as to allow a mention of the guys on Femina. Close your ears briefly if you don't care for this kind of chat much. But Josh Tarling won gold in the men's junior time trial as well. They came away from Australia top dogs. The USA and Spain left empty-handed, however, but strong results
across
the board.
It does make you think, actually. Zoe Back said if she was a country, where she would have ranked on her own.
Yeah, that's a good...
She would have been pretty high up. We love this.
She would have been pretty high up because of the two gold medals, because it's weighted not towards the number of golds, medals, but of course towards who has the number of golds. So I think she would have been, you know, near or at the top because there was nobody else with three golds. So congratulations to the country of Baxter.
Do you know what? This is what it's like to be from Yorkshire during an Olympic Games. Every Olympic cycle... people from Yorkshire like to say just how well Yorkshire would do if it was an entire country in the medals table. Anyway, Zoe Back said, you're like Yorkshire. You're like Yorkshire. You're a country of your own. Congratulations. On to the elite woman then. And Ellen van Dijk won the individual time trial for a third time, her second time in a row, with Grace Brown finishing second and Marlon Rooster in third. The mixed relay time trial created a lot of drama. We'll get to that in a moment. But it was won by Switzerland over Italy, with Australia in third. And then the road race won in spectacular fashion, even by her standards, by Annemiek van Vleuten with a broken elbow over Lotte Kopecky and Sylvia Persico in third. And of course, the under 23 race, which was the inaugural running of this race within a race. It was won by Niamh Fisher-Black of New Zealand, with Pfeiffer Georgie in second and Ricarda Bauernfeind of Germany in third. Well, we did have the Giro d'Emilia Donne, with Felice Longoborghini taking her third career victory over Veronica Ewers and Sofia Bertet Solo. And that was Longoborghini's fifth win of 2022. And then we have also had Bache Chimay Bache, with Lorena Vibes winning her last race for Team DSM, because of course she does. And it gave her a race tally this year, according to Dan Lloyd, off of Twitter, of 23 wins from 50 days of racing. Absolutely phenomenal. So we've only got one Women's World Tour race left this season. Oh, we've got a finger in the air. Lizzie Banks wants to have a word. Yes, Lizzie, speak.
Well, can I just slip in? And I think because this only happened yesterday, Tre Valli Varesine, Elisa Longoborghini, backed up her win at the Giro dell'Emilia with a second victory there. And it was almost a replication of the podium, because it was Elisa Longoborghini, Veronica Ewers, and then Anne Santesteban taking the third spot. And that itself is an interesting battle, because actually Trek Segafredo were only 600 points behind SD Works after the World Championships in the overall best team. And this isn't the Women's World Tour best team, because SD Works have got that wrapped up. This is the sort of points for everything throughout the whole year. And in those last two races, Trek have gained over 400 points. So it's down to less than 200 points, with only this last Tour de Romandie coming up, which is going to be an absolute Swiss showdown with all of the main names: Vollering Mormon, Longoborghini, Utrup Ludwig, if she's recovered from the sickness that took her out of the Italian races, Nivea Doma, Ewers, Spratt, Santesteban, Lippe, and of course the new World Road Race champion, Annemiek van Vleuten.
Oh, can't wait.
So we're going to see Trek pushing everything to get those points to try and take that win off SD Works in the Tour de Romandie this weekend.
I have to say, they'd be a very popular top team, really, wouldn't they? I think, much as I love SD Works and all the rest of it, but they've had so much success over the years. And I think Trek have really won my heart in the last couple of years by the nature of their wins, the attacking way they ride, the way that they really ride as a team together. I think it's brilliant to see their progress over the last couple of years.
And SD Works have won the best team in the Women's World Tour. Yeah. So why not, let's give the best team
Share it out. Come on.
Share out the prizes.
Come on. It's only a game, guys. Let's just share it all around.
Thank you for keeping me right, Lizzie. We were supposed to record this yesterday, weren't we? So I had written my news roundup, and then I have been attacked by migraines since then. So I spent most of yesterday in bed when I wasn't looking after the kids. So I totally missed that. So thank you. A few things to look out for then. We have the inaugural UCI Gravel Worlds coming up. Pauline Ferrand-Prévot will be attempting to win her fourth world title of the season. I mean, holy moly guacamole. That's October the 8th and 9th in Veneto in Italy. I noticed that Ride London has kept its Women's World Tour status for next year, even though it failed to meet the live TV requirements this year, which I find very interesting. Apparently, they've been able to provide contractual evidence of their commitment to television for next year, and that's been deemed enough to be able to keep the race. Begs the question what they provided as evidence this year, but I'd be very keen to see that these rules are actually implemented. Much as I love Ride London, it needs to meet the standards, doesn't it? And if they don't do it this year, then
yeah,
that's it, surely.
I think for many years, actually, I mean, it's never a one strike and you're out on the live stream, because I mean, the women's tour, we only got that this year to have a live coverage at the women's tour, didn't we? So and they've always been a women's world tour race, so I don't think maybe they're going to come down a little bit harder on it now that it seems that every race has live coverage.
It can be done. We know it can be done.
Yeah, so
it seems to be very clear that if they didn't get it sorted for 2023, then that was their last chance, and that they had to provide evidence that they were doing it. So I think that there was so much uproar last year that if they don't do it in 2023, I think that's it.
Yeah.
That's really
that's it. Once and for all. That's like with my kids. 3, 2, 1, 3, 2. So Ride London is on at second, 3, 2, 1. Anyway, the Cadell Evans great... Sorry, my iPad has clearly done a typo, and I went to read this out word for word a la Ron Burgundy, and it's quite a fitting autocorrect. I have written down, or my iPad has written down, the Cadell Evans Great Oven Road Race returns to the calendar for next year. Obviously, it's the Great Ocean Road Race with the women's race.
That's the Great British Bake Off version, yeah, exactly. But for cyclists.
The women's race is going to be 22 kilometres longer for next year. And the last little bit of news that I've got, Lizzie probably will be able to help me out if I've left any holes, is that the Kiwi Road champion Olivia Ray has been banned for 2.5 years after admitting to doping violations. The 24-year-old was supplied by performance-enhancing drugs by the US rider Jackson Nash, who was banned for life last month. So I think that's your roundup.
Just to add to that, Orla, it's a very, very sad story that... sounds from the news reports like it's been intertwined with reports of domestic abuse, and of course there's no circumstances where I would ever condone doping, but it sounds like there is so much more to the story that needs to be unpicked, and a very, very sad case for both riders.
The only other thing that I wanted to mention, Orla, was the rumour of a very strong rumour going around that Ineos will have a women's team. And it's funny that you mentioned Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, because she is the rider that has been tipped to be joining that team.
I am trying to get to the bottom of that. I had hoped to squirrel out some information by now, but not just yet. But yeah, the rumours are quite solid at this stage, aren't they? It sounds... like it's coming from several sources anyway, so we'll watch that space with a lot of interest.
Well, there's a couple more snippets of information, one that actually came out of the Twitter sphere this morning, and there were rumours yesterday, I think, that the Tour de France was going to be going back to the Puy de Dôme after many, many years. But then this morning, and I have to say, it didn't say the Tour de France or the Tour de France Femme, but it did say this morning that Clermont-Ferrand had been confirmed as hosting the start of the women's Tour de France in 2023, which is interesting because for those who like their French geography, Clermont-Ferrand is just 23 miles from the top of the Puy de Dôme. So I'm wondering if the Tour de France Femme could be set for a stage one up the Puy de Dôme. Wouldn't that be 23 kilometer ITT Clermont-Ferrand to Puy de Dôme? But there had been some talk last year about the return of this hilltop finish, mountaintop finish, and actually how the logistics were so difficult getting everything up to the top of the mountain that perhaps using the women's race could be a good way to test the waters for it. So putting these two bits of information together, in the last few hours, I think it could be something that we want to watch and see how that unfolds. But the Tour de France presentation for the Hommes and the Femmes will be later this month. So we will be keeping our ears and eyes peeled.
Still guessing on fueling? Not sure what or when to eat or drink on rides that matter? Never again. Optimize your fueling strategy with real-time glucose data, actionable insights, and personalized analytics. We're here to help you achieve your performance goals. Go to supersapiens.com for more on how to track your energy levels and fuel for success.
Well, thank you very much to Super Sapiens, title sponsors of the Cycling Podcast. If you want to find out how their system of continuous glucose monitoring can help tailor your fueling and training for success, then head to supersapiens.com. Well, we come out of the World Championship week with two phenomenal Dutch dominant riders in the form of Ellen van Dijk winning the time trial and Annemiek van Vleuten winning the road race. I mean, what can we say, Orla, about these two phenomenal riders who have just been on the top of their game for so many years now?
Do you know what? I think anything you say about them has to be in hushed tones of awe. I absolutely love what they provide. And also, I do love that women's racing is at a stage where both of those wins were something of a surprise. If you were to look at the result sheet, you might think, oh yeah, so far so inevitable. Certainly when we get to the road race, there was nothing expected about how that panned out. But even with Ellen van Dijk, she wasn't expecting to win this, you know, and it's how many years now since her first world title? I should have looked that up.
12, 13
years since her first Rainbow World title. And I feel like what's really impressive about her in particular is how long she's been on the top, but how much the landscape of women's racing has changed around and underneath her. So she's not just been at the top of her game and winning rainbow jerseys when there isn't much competition. We've never had a fiercer, more exciting women's peloton than we do right now, and we have done for the last couple of years, and she is still right up there. I just find her mentally, physically so impressive, and actually what I love about her more than anything is her energy. She brings such energy to everything she does and big smiles, and she still seems to really blink and love it, which is amazing. Shall we get into listening to her before we discuss it any further?
Well, I'm just going to quickly do a live corrections corner.
Good.
Corrections corner for myself. It was actually 2013, so it was 11 years ago, but 2013, 2021, 2022, absolutely remarkable.
Whatever way you slice it, it is phenomenal what she's been doing. So I asked her about her time trial. I asked about the disastrous, frankly, comical mixed relay time trial, which we'll get to in a bit, and about Annemiek van Vleuten's shock win, quite frankly, in the road race. And I also asked her about a new Netflix series that has caused a bit of a stir. But first, here's Ellen van Dijk on the time trial. So first of all, gefeliciteerd on your third world title. How does this one feel?
Yeah, of course, super special again. But they all have their own story. And the first time I won it was really, it felt like it was a breakthrough for me, like the start of a great career. And then it took me 8 years to get another one, and I was chasing that forever. So yeah, last year was super, super emotional. And this year was a bit of a surprise. I just thought, well, if I can do a good result, it's a bonus. But I had my year in the rainbow already. And then, it took me some time to realize I really did it again. And it feels very special because it's two in a row and also on two complete different courses. So, yeah, I'm just, super, super happy with it.
Were you really surprised, Ellen? Because I know the course isn't one that you would have preferred. And I've read how you said you packed your rainbow jersey away on the night before. But you've been in incredibly good form. You've been incredibly strong. Were you really that surprised whenever you took the title again?
Yeah, actually, I was also because I had quite some back problems in the week before. So I had a lot of uncertainties and I didn't race for 2 weeks. So I knew my training was going well and my training was all good. But I always thought on a course like this, other riders are better. And yeah, I don't think I'm the favorite here. But looking back, maybe it was a course for me. I mean, it showed in the end. But going there, I never really had the feeling like, oh, this is going to be my world championships. And then the surprise is even bigger.
Do you think this confirms something for you then? I mean, I find it quite amusing, really, I guess, that you would be surprised to be world champion again, although, as you say, it comes with all of the caveats with the injury or the back trouble anyway, and the course not suiting you. But whenever you won your first, you say it was a surprise. The second took such a long time. Does this confirm for you just where you sit in women's cycling?
Yeah, kind of. So the first was not really a surprise, but at that moment, it felt like this was my breakthrough. And yeah, then I kind of confirmed that 8 years later, I could still be on the top. And then, yeah, to do it another time the year after, it kind of, yeah, feels for me, it's very satisfying because it feels like, wow, yeah, it shows that I'm, yeah, I'm really the best at this moment, which is always a bit weird to say, but that's especially, like I said, because it's on two complete different courses and yeah, 2 years. So that's something that really gives me a lot of satisfaction.
It's pretty cool. Talk to me about the drama of the mixed relay, Ellen. You almost couldn't have made all of that up. I mean, tell me how it all happened from your viewpoint.
So we trained the day before together with the three of us, and then already we had nearly a crash, which was quite scary. It's always a bit scary to ride that close to each other, and normally you do it with your own teammates and you're very well used to each other, but yeah, with this it was a bit different. So that was not the greatest experience, but after a while we were used to each other and we thought, okay, let's go for this. And we were all quite nervous, but I was in the wheel of Annemiek, and I saw her going off the ramp, and I had a little bit of distance already because Rianne Marcus, she started very fast, and I'm not a fast starter, so I thought, okay, wait a second. And I also saw Annemiek was pushing on the limit, and yeah, we still don't know really what happened, but from my point of view, she shifted to the inner chain ring or something, and then she just... Yeah, I just saw her going into her frame, and then I saw she was steering the other way and crashing. And yeah, at that moment, I thought I was also going to crash, but somehow I could ride over her bike. And then you look back and I thought, oh no, Annemiek, this is really bad. And then it took some time to realize, oh, but we are still with two and we have to finish this race. So we had to keep going. But also during this race, you're thinking like, oh, I hope Annemiek is okay. So that was of course a very weird day, especially also because the men, they screwed it up for us already.
Yeah, all their fault. How aware were you of what was happening with the men's team and everything that had befallen Bauke?
Yeah, so we heard it before we started that Bauke had a mechanical. So, and we also knew that they had to do it with the two of them. So we thought, oh no, this is going to be really hard to make up this time. I mean, we're used to that we need to make up time for the men like last year. But this was almost impossible. We knew that. Yeah, and then of course when on the crash, that was for sure impossible. But anyway, I think we would have never made up the... I think they lost 40 seconds or something. That was not possible for us to get that time back.
With two mechanicals and another attack by a bird, do you take some comfort from the fact that you finished in fifth all the same, or does it make it all the more frustrating? Because clearly you could have done something special if everything had gone according to plan.
I think it could have been really close with Switzerland and Italy, because they were also only 3 seconds apart from each other, and I think we will be really close in this battle. So I think it would have been really exciting. But yeah, what if doesn't count. And I mean, yeah, we had this bad luck. And I think Rianne and me, we did a really good time trial. I felt good that day. But we got fifth with it. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a shame at that moment. But you know, when you're a world champion already, everything is like, oh, it could be nice, but you know.
I'll take your word for that, Ellen. I will never have any idea what that feels like. You were room sharing with Annemiek, weren't you?
Yeah, for 2 weeks. Yeah, first we had a house together close to the course, and then we shared a hotel room in Sydney. Yeah.
So how was she after that then, given the fact that she would have been one of the favourites for the road race?
Yeah, of course, super disappointed. And she came into the room late evening, and she said straight away, oh, the doctor said I could ride and I do not really have a lot of pain. And she could actually do everything with her elbow. So I thought, okay, I never had a doubt if she was going to start. I never doubted that. But then the next day we went riding, and and she was quite positive, and she thought, oh yeah, it's no problem, and she could do like what she wanted, but she couldn't stand on the bike, and of course that was necessary. And then the day after we went again, and she could also stand on her bike, so I thought, okay, I think it's gonna be all right. But you never know. Of course, yeah. she was not as strong as she normally was, so we had to change all the tactics and all the plans. And she was she tried to hide that she was very disappointed, but she couldn't really on the room. She was of course you feel that she was just super devastated, and she was saying like, oh, I really wanted to become one more time world champion, and now it's not possible, and you have your world champion title, I'm so jealous, this kind of stuff, you know? And, I didn't really know what to say. Of course I tried to comfort her in the beginning, but then at one point, I also don't know what to say, and I thought, let's just make the best out of it. And in the end, it's still Annemiek, so you know she can always do crazy stuff. So she showed that once again.
I am guessing that none of you could have imagined that the race would have panned out the way that it did. I mean, it was to watch it was almost shocking. I was on my feet screaming at the television because I couldn't believe what I was seeing in that finale. I'm presuming that was just as much of a surprise for all of you.
Definitely, definitely. No one could have ever thought this. I think no one in the team, no one, Annemiek herself, not even, no one. Like, you saw the disbelief also from all of us, I think. In the final kilometers, I was still trying to bring Marianne back to the group in front of us. And the group in front of us was with Annemiek in the back. But that group was still not with the first riders in the race. And I saw Annemiek at the very back of that group, and I saw her like, you know, almost, yeah, you saw her like really in the back of that group. So I could almost touch her all the time. And I saw she was not in the front. And then, until the last kilometer, all of a sudden, we just couldn't reach that group anymore. And then you cross the finish line, and then you hear, Annemiek has won. And I'm like, Annemiek has won? How did this happen? What happened? that was just really, really weird. Like, you kind of, I kind of crossed the finish line a little bit disappointed, thinking like, oh yeah, well, we couldn't do it today. Mm. And then you hear this. So that was just, I think everybody was in total disbelief.
Obviously, you were all in for Marianne Vos. How was she afterwards? Because it wasn't to be for her, but obviously the team won, essentially.
Yeah, she was super happy for Annemiek, and of course also a bit disappointed that she couldn't finish off the work. But in the end, she was just really happy that the team won, I think. And Marianne, I mean, we all know, like, as a rider, you always want to win. So, of course, she was disappointed that she couldn't do it. But I think we showed, we did everything we could as a team. And, if it's not the day, then it's not the day. But in the end, it turned out perfect.
So what's next for you then, Ellen? It's almost a shame that the World Championships come so late in the season whenever it confirms just how strong you are right now.
I'll do Tour de Romandie this weekend. And then I do Chrono de Nation in France, and then we go to America to Trek for a couple of days just for the sponsor, and then it's really done. So still some nice stuff to do, and still I can wear my rainbow jersey, so that's cool.
That is nice. I want to ask you briefly, I know you're about to head off on a training session and I'm keeping you too long as it is, but I was watching the new Netflix documentary, and shamefully, I can't remember the name of it now. I will remember by the time we get to record the podcast. But obviously, you have a... Yeah. What's it called again?
Human Playground.
Human Playground, that's it. Obviously, you have a huge starring role in the first episode, which is narrated by Idris Elba. It's been amazing for me to watch that. I think because I'm obviously so used to watching racing and women's racing anyway, and I watched every second of Paris-Roubaix that I could watch. But seeing it from an outsider's point of view and seeing just how brutal it can be portrayed by people who don't cover women's racing is really actually exciting. How did you find it?
Yeah, well, thanks for the nice words. Yeah, it was really cool to watch it. Anyway, I think it's super cool to be in a Netflix series.
Yeah.
Last year, I almost forgot about it already, because last year they had many, many days where we were filming and doing stuff. And then it was quite an intense project. But then now it's 1 year later already. So I thought, oh, yeah. And it's really cool when you watch it and you think, oh, yeah, I look pretty tough.
Do you know why that is, Ellen? Because you are pretty tough.
No, it's cool that they make me look like this. In one way, I also thought, you know, I had a concussion in that race.
Yeah,
I still finished the race. And then, I hear a lot of positive comments, which is really nice from people like, oh, yeah, it's really cool, you're so tough, blah, 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 which is great. But I also like to say that, honestly, I would not recommend this because, I finished the race, but it took me more than 3 months to recover from this concussion. And it's really not a smart idea to keep riding me for concussion. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, you know, you want to be tough and you want to be cool, but yeah, sometimes it's really stupid.
Yeah, very, very true. Have you had much of a reaction from that series so far, because it feels like it's gone a lot wider than usual cycling coverage, which you would expect, I guess, when it's a Netflix series and it is a bigger project than just cycling, and as I say, Idris Elba's involved in it. Have you had much of a reaction to it?
Yeah, I did, actually, which is really nice, also from people outside of cycling. Yeah, so it's cool that other people also see from a different point of view what we're doing.
So that was Ellen van Dijk, once again the world champion. And we ended up finishing that interview talking about something that's, I guess, connected obviously to cycling, but quite separate. And that's this new Netflix series that has caused quite a lot of interest, really. It's called Human Playground, narrated by Idris Elba. And what's really interesting is that the first episode, it's all about the history of play and humankind's relationship with play. And this first episode in particular is about how we push the pain barrier in pursuit of play, and follows Ellen in particular through the inaugural Paris-Roubaix Femme. What I find fascinating watching it is it was my husband who actually drew my attention to it. And he's not really into cycling very much, other than what he hears from me. He's not even that much into sport. But it popped up on his Netflix suggestions. And then the next day he said, oh, you've got to watch this. This is amazing. Look at this race. It's absolutely brutal. Look at this rider. She's phenomenal. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's Paris-Roubaix and that's Ellen. Of course I know all about this. But watching it as an outsider, essentially, or at least through outsiders' eyes, made me see the race and cycling and women's racing in a really different way. And I find that really exciting. And I love the fact that they've done that, because it's sort of, hopefully will bring a wider audience to it anyway. But I find it really interesting just to watch women's racing from the outside, as if I'd never seen it before, you know?
It's so interesting also thinking back to Paris-Roubaix, because it does feel like a distant memory, doesn't it, this year's Paris-Roubaix, and thinking about how instrumental Ellen van Dijk is for, you know, both her trade team, Trek Segafredo, because obviously she launched Elisa Longo Borghini.
Yeah, but this was actually following year one. So this is when Lizzie Deignan, she was also instrumental there, ended up crashing, I think.
Oh, well, there you go.
Finished with concussion. But still finished the race, which is why Ellen was saying in our chat there, maybe not such a good idea, you know, to keep riding through concussion, because it took me a couple of months to recover from that.
Yeah.
Just seeing it from that perspective made me realise how brutal the sport is. And I forget that. Lizzie, you lot are bonkers. You're properly bonkers. It's a stupid sport.
Well, I can't dispute that, but she was also instrumental in Annemiek's World Championships win, and you know, she was instrumental in bringing what was at that point the third group on the road back, and so was Annemiek in terms of pulling, because they were trying to pull Marianne Vos back, and so, like you say, across the board. And I think that, you know, had they not have had this disastrous hiccup with Annemiek crashing so spectacularly in the mixed time trial, then they would have been vying for that win against Switzerland, even though the men had a disastrous time in their time trial. So she is so influential across the board. And I think what I love about Ellen is in the last few years, she seems to have really grown into herself almost, become so confident in herself, so confident in her ability as a rider and somehow lost the ability to worry about things. I don't know if that's the right way of putting it, but she seems to enjoy it so much and have less energy for worrying about if something's going to go wrong or if she's going to win, and more energy into working out how she's going to do her best for herself and for the team. And it's really paying off. She's the world hour record, she's the three-time world time trial champion, and you know, she's of course the former European road race champion, and you would never put it past Ellen van Dijk to be the world road race champion either. She can do anything. She's always there. She can be there on any course. She's a phenomenal rider and an inspiration for many on the bike and with the way that she conducts herself so importantly off the bike.
We should actually give a quick word about her time trial performance, because it was extraordinary. I mean, in second place on that time trial was Grace Brown, who was 12 seconds back. And then Marlon Reusser, who, Lizzie, you tipped. We've been kind of bigging up the rivalry between Marlon Reusser and Ellen van Dijk, haven't we, this year, and how that will continue into the future. Marlon Reusser finished 41 seconds down on Ellen van Dijk. Victoria Guazzini finished 52 seconds, and everyone else was over a minute down on her. I mean, it's really an incredible performance from Ellen van Dijk. And well, was Grace Brown a surprise for you, Lizzie? Because, you know, you had tipped Marlon Reusser to... you had tipped it to be between Marlon Reusser and Ellen van Dijk going when we were talking in the preview.
I think we said in the last episode that Grace Brown was a not that dark horse. If I remember rightly, because, I mean, Grace had been performing so well. And I think the reason that it's so easy to say that the rivalry is between Ellen van Dijk and Marlon Reusser is because we saw them so recently in the European Championships go head-to-head, and it was an absolute nail-biter. Now, Grace Brown wasn't there for obvious reasons, being an Australian citizen, but we did see from her a very dominant performance at the Commonwealth Games. I'm pretty sure, I'm just going to say that we've said that she was a dark horse, and hopefully nobody will go back and listen to that episode to actually find out.
That sounds good to me.
But she'd been performing so strongly. It was a home world championships. The bittersweet thing for Grace Brown that she was one of the early starters, and so she was sat in that hot seat for the whole race, only to finally be taken off the hot seat by the final rider out on the course, Ellen van Dijk. So I think it was a really great result for Grace. Not unexpected, but very difficult to have to sit there in your home world championships only to get removed from the top spot right at the very last.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator. Roll with the sausage breakfast burrito. Buddy it up with a honey buddy. Or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes. And then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the World Championships road race, because it was looking that it didn't look like it was going to be an Annemiek van Vleuten victory whatsoever, did it? And I really thought when that group of five, Liana Lipa, Lisa Longo-Borghini, Cecily Utrecht-Ludwig, Ashley Moorman and Kasia Nevia-Doma went away twice, in fact, it was like a little deja vu moment. I really thought they were set for the victory. Lizzie, how did you read it when you were watching it?
Oh, the race was really good, wasn't it? It was really, really good. And it's interesting because Kasia Nevia-Doma said in her interviews very plainly, I'm going to attack the second last time up Mount Pleasant, which was the roughly 12% kilometre long climb on the course. And it was the decisive moment on the course that the riders had to tackle numerous times, 6 times, I think. And that's exactly what she did. And she forced this group with the riders that you mentioned. Leanna Lippert was absolutely driving that group. She was really the key component to it staying away. Nivea Damer was committed as well. But I have to say there were a couple of members who were definitely less committed to that move. There was a Dutch team behind who had, to everybody's surprise, missed it with an slightly out of sorts Annemiek van Vleuten, of course, racing with that broken elbow. Like we said before, Ellen van Dijk worked so hard to bring it back, and it came back together, and then it split again, and it looked like they might just make it to the line, but it was that lack of cohesion, and in the end, that lack of cohesion cost every single one of that five a medal. None of those five that were away for such a significant proportion of the action-packed part of the race actually ended up with a medal. So, I mean, we heard Nivea Domer say in the interviews afterwards that she was very, very frustrated by that. And I think that Leanna Lippert must have been one of the most frustrated riders because she looked so strong and she worked so, so hard and it came back together. But really, it was the biggest surprise of all. Annemiek van Vleuten, who was in the third group on the road, had spent much of the road race working for Marianne Vos, who was the out-and-out leader for the day. They had one clear plan, as we so often criticise the Dutch for not having. They had that plan. And within the last kilometre, you know, Annemiek van Vleuten came back to the second group, which at the same time came back to the front group, and then took an absolute flyer from the back of the bunch, 2 seconds hesitation, and then that was all it took for everybody else to lose the race, and Annemiek in absolute disbelief to take what I think is probably the best win of her career.
Yeah, I would agree. I have rarely, I mean, I get animated watching the end of bike races anyway, or the key action of a bike race, and I can't sit still, I can't sit down. But with this finale, I cannot remember screaming so loudly in disbelief at a television. I was literally 2 feet jumping up and down, pointing at the screen as if no one else around me could see it at the time. But I was pointing at it going, what the? And lots of expletives and animation. I literally could not believe what I was watching. And that, to say that about someone like Annemiek van Vleuten, who we have seen win in so many different ways, just absolutely floored me. And also, I think the fact that the race was panning out pretty much the way we expected, as in, we kind of knew, in inverted commas, if Annemiek van Vleuten was going to win, she was going to have to attack early. She couldn't attack early because of her injury. So we were hoping for this select group of punchers towards the end getting away, which they did, not just once, but twice. So you're thinking, I mean, I tweeted you at the time, Lizzie.
You know, I was so absorbed in the race that I didn't see it until a few hours afterwards. I was so captivated by it. But sorry, Ola, let you continue.
Yeah, I was just so proud. I just thought this is exactly how I knew this race was going to pan out, until Annemiek goes and Annemiek's it in an entirely different way. And it was one of the most beautiful sporting moments I've maybe ever seen, really. Everything together. And obviously we should not be glorifying or hero worshipping somebody riding through injury. It was entirely her decision. She's a grown up. She knows exactly how her body works. She should be allowed, and she is allowed, to make her own decisions. But you cannot ignore the fact that she rode through the pain barrier in a way that most of us simply cannot comprehend. And I'm still flabbergasted even thinking about it. And actually, one thing I wanted to ask both of you is whether you think that, you know, given that select group, given that they got away not just once, but twice, and given the fact that Annemiek gave plenty of tail room for somebody to jump on the back of her in that finale, it wasn't like a last minute sprint because she wouldn't have been able to do that. There are plenty of opportunities, it feels like, as an outsider, for any one of those riders to have been able to make that race their own, maybe with the exception of Leanna Lippert, because she worked so hard. Like, it's difficult to see how she wouldn't have been on her knees in the end, maybe too hard, I don't know. But did the others also give it away in a way? And I hate that. Actually, I want to almost take that back, as the words are leaving my mouth, because that's always disrespectful both to the riders and to the winner. And that's not what I mean. But could there be regret, I guess, when you're playing armchair Directeur Sportif, and you're saying, why didn't they? But 100%.
I mean, we're going to hear from Fisher Black, the new under 23 world champion, later on, and we'll hear exactly how regretful she feels, because she was the rider on Annemiek's wheel when Annemiek did that attack. Lotte Kopecky, who took second place, the vice world champion now, we saw her absolutely throw her fists in frustration against her handlebars as she crossed the line for second place, because she knows full well that she screwed up. She hesitated for 1 second too long, and she absolutely dominated that bunch sprint, but she was a second behind the winner. So she lost the world championships in effect. And then of course the regret from Kasia Niewiadoma, because the group hadn't worked together. Could she have attacked that group? I don't know. And then of course you think, well, if Annemiek did that flyer when the third group was coming back to the second group, who was coming back to the first group, could somebody in the second group not have done that as a surprise when coming back to the first group, because it only would have been a couple of hundred meters later? But that is the nature of bike racing. You get to the finish, and unless you've won, you always think you could have done something more.
I really did think it was in the hands of that that group of five that went away every time on Mount Pleasant. I really did think I do think that they could have won it. The winner could have come from those five, and they should have. And I was actually surprised about the lack of cohesion.
Surely they should have done.
We hardly saw Cecilie Ludwig on the front of that group at all. Didn't see much from Ashley.
Or when
Moorman.
She did a dummy pull.
Yeah, and you know did and that really surprised me, because you know, when they all came back together into that slightly bigger group, those riders, a lot of them were the only kind of solo riders for their solo representatives of their country. So Cecilie Ludwig was the only Danish rider. Ashley Moorman was the only South African rider. And obviously Elisa Longo-Borghini had other Italians, and Liana Lippert had other Germans. But it surprised me that Ashley Moorman Passio and Cecilie Ludwig didn't do more, because they were the one chance for their national team. But obviously we can't tell what was going through their head, or you know how well they were feeling. But I would have thought Cecilie Ludwig particularly would have been, the course would have really suited her. Ashley Moorman-Passio, I can see that she can get away on the climbs, but she's a lot more kind of a pure climber than the likes of Cecilie Ludwig or Liana Lippert, who I think could have probably, in Cecily's own words, put the hammer down a little bit, and could have stayed away, especially when you see them go away twice on the same climb. It makes you think, well, surely those are the strongest riders in this race, for them to have not kept away. But, you know, there's so much dynamics going into it, isn't there? I mean, you know, you sometimes hear about riders not wanting to work because they don't want they don't have a particular thing against one of the other riders, or because they're not sure what they're doing, or they're not sure about their own abilities. So there's lots of things that go into it, but I really thought that the win was in their hands at that point in the race.
Isn't it that age-old impossible scenario, really, where you've got a bunch of really strong riders, many of whom are well-suited to the same kind of scenario, and you can't go too early, obviously, because you might go too early, and you also don't want to drag anyone else to the line and give them the advantage. And like I say, Liana Lippert did a brilliant job of bringing everyone with her. If there had been a few others doing the same effort as her, you would think that surely they would have managed to stay away.
Well, you say that, but the ironic thing is that the Lippert was the rider that finished in the highest position out of all of them. Out of the top 13 riders, the only nationality that was Italy. True. So the top 13 riders were all from a different nation other than two riders from Italy. And so, I mean, definitely, you know, the other riders, excluding Longo-Borghini, had most to lose. Longo-Borghini had a good card to play with Persico behind. But whether or not she knew that Persico behind was another thing, because let's not forget they don't have race radios. So you'll know who's in front of you if you see those riders go, but you won't always know exactly the makeup of the group behind. So, and in the case of Uttrup Ludwig, she does have a good finishing kick. So I think that in particular for her, that was a big loss. And also for Moorman-Passio, you know, Ashley Moorman-Passio ended up finishing 11th outside of the top 10. She would have been guaranteed a top five. And you just think, just just work together, just cement that lead. And then once you get to 1 or 2K, start messing around, but at least make that lead work. Mm. But, you know, I actually, yeah. I'm pleased that Leanna Lippert did come fourth in the end, because although she, you know, I'm sure she will be bittersweet about missing the podium, at least she got the best reward for actually working hard in that group.
But it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, who were they worried about? Because I know that you said, Lizzie, as soon as Marianne Vos is in a group, people start, like, they stop working because you're worried about Marianne Vos. But in that group, they all kind of evenly match in terms of their kick at the end. But I mean, I would have said Cecilia Ludwig was probably one of the better riders with a stronger kick, finishing kick. Mm. So you'd think that she would kind of collaborate a bit more, because it would have been moving towards her kind of racing more if they'd stayed away.
It's so interesting. I think all five of them, you know, you can all think of, sometimes you think of Longo Borghini as someone who doesn't have a punch, but then there's races that she's won, you know, from
the women's
sprint,
tour
actually.
We saw she was exactly. You know, do you remember that last stage at the women's tour, Lizzie?
Exactly. And she took the bonus seconds and she took the overall victory with that sprint. And then Nivea Domus, famous for her punch, so is Utrip Ludwig. Actually, Ashley Mormon-Passio at Liège-Bastogne-Liège, we saw her sprinting for the line and it was incredibly impressive. Leanna Lippert, we know she's a punchy rider. So actually, none of them have anything to lose. I don't know. That kind of behaviour always baffles me in the race and watching it.
I'm kind of relieved to hear that, because I always get really annoyed when I'm watching it. And then I think to myself, oh, Orla, what do you know? You've never raced a bike in your life, you know? So all I'm doing is watching it as an onlooker. But when I see that scenario play out, I think, oh, come on, surely logic would dictate X, Y, or Z. But I guess the other thing to remember is what you've referenced already, Lizzie, is that they don't have time gaps. They don't know. They don't have race radio. So they may not have known what kind of a gap they had on the bunch behind. They may have thought they had more time. They may have thought they had more time to play around. Who knows?
Yes, but they do know that the World Championships is up for grabs and that they need to work together. And they do know that there are always riders that you do want to be in a bunch with, you know, if you're trying to break away, and there are riders that you don't want to be in a bunch with. And I'm not going to specifically name any names, but some of these riders are notorious for not working.
Salty. I like it. We'll have to have an after hours episode, Lizzie, and get it all out of you.
The live after hours.
That'll be a friend of the podcast.
Sit around with a nightcap and a cigarette and dish the dirt. But
exactly.
I mean, it was great to see a race that wasn't I mean, obviously the Dutch won in the end when Annemiek van Vleuten won, but it wasn't a Dutch dominated race. And one thing we haven't mentioned is, of course, that Demi Vollering didn't take to the start because she had COVID.
Yeah, DNS.
And so it was great to see a race that didn't have that Dutch control on it. And it just shows you their power is that they can not have the control on the race and still win it, doesn't it?
A race that didn't have the Dutch control, but the Dutch won.
Yeah, yes. they didn't.
No, I mean, that's what was so great about it. It was so unexpected. We thought, wow, this is a race where finally the Dutch aren't. They're not in control. They're not winning. They're not just... They're the ones in the third group chasing everybody
and they
else.
Still win.
And then they still won. And the drama, you know, the fact that we're all sitting on the sofa yelling at the TV, that's what made it
Do
so
you know what
great.
As well? Thank goodness for Elisa Balsamo last year, because I think if we'd come off the back of a Dutch win with that kind of a win, we might not have been quite so excited about it. But it was the fact that it was completely unexpected. The fact that we weren't necessarily expecting a Dutch winner this time, certainly not as the out-and-out favourite with Marianne Vos, means that we could celebrate it all the more, really. So thank you. Grazie, Elisa.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to our sponsors, Science in Sport. If you're looking for sports nutrition, then head to scienceinsport.com. And of course, as always, you can get 25% off your products there if you use the code SISCP25. Now, we haven't given too much mention to the winner of the under-23. Obviously, the under-23 titles wrapped into the same race. as the elite road race. And we spoke a little bit about, well, we spoke actually quite a lot about how that kind of doesn't particularly work in the preview. But we should give our congratulations to Niamh Fisher-Black for taking the under 23 title. And I have to say, I know that it was less than ideal to have the two races combined in the way that it was. But I'm so grateful that we came out of that race with an under 23 champion like Niamh Fisher-Black, because she is exactly the kind of rider that you would want to have that accolade, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. She's very well spoken. She stands up for what she believes in. And I think that it's very important that we have women who are prepared to speak their mind when it matters in these roles. And she has a voice and she will use it for good. So let's hear what Niamh Fisher-Black, the new World Under 23 Road Race Champion, had to say about the Wollongong World Championships. Well, Niamh, first off, how does it feel to become the first ever Under 23 Women's World Road Race Champion?
Yeah. It's good. I mean, yeah, a week on now, it's pretty much, yeah, sunken. I can see the rainbow jersey every morning, so yeah, it's a pretty, pretty cool feeling. Any cyclist dream, I think, to have a rainbow jersey, so yeah, I'm glad to be part of the club now.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, well, it's interesting because when you started out as a professional cyclist, there wasn't that option to be a U23 world champion, was there? But you had a brilliant race and you were fighting to the death. On the final lap, you're in that small group with the eventual winner, Annemiek van Vleuten, and did a huge pull, probably critical, I'd say, in bringing that group back to the front. Did you go into this race with the mentality that you were fighting for that U23 rainbow jersey, or was that an afterthought and the elite podium was actually something that was on your radar?
I went into the race to the race was for the elite podium, so that I went in to race for that. I knew on that kind of course that I could maybe be up there with the top girls, so... of course I wanted to race for the elite race, and that was the overall goal. There was always an extra incentive there that there was another rainbow jersey that I could get that day. So, of course I thought about that also.
How much did you know out on the road? Because, of course, we know that there are no race radios in this race, famously. And it was very clear to us watching on the TV that you were really fighting for that win in the U23 classification, well, and the overall, but very clearly you were ahead of Pfeiffer Georgie, who was the next rider in the U23 category on the road, who was in the group behind you. But how much did you know? Were you fully aware of the situation at that point going into the finale of who was where on the road, and the fact that if you went to the finish with that group, that you were going to take that rainbow jersey?
I was quite aware. I mean, at this point in the year and in the competition, I know my competition. I mean, I'm racing them all year, so I know in the back of my head who's under 23 and who's elite. And always, of course, we had no race radios, but that just means that we have to be a little bit extra aware and extra focused the whole race, and I think that was probably one of the hardest things about Worlds, being keeping switched on for four and a half hours of racing. But yeah, always I made sure to look around me, see who was there. I think that's really important in racing, to acknowledge who's there and the strengths of the riders around you. So of course I was doing it anyway, and in my head I could see who was on 23 and who was not. And quickly, when the race started to sort of blow up, like in the last two laps, I quickly sort of realised that I was on pretty well only the under 23 that was sort of going with the top move, but that next small group back, I was the only one there both times it blew up on that climb. I was pretty confident there.
So was there a point when that mentality switched to kind of thinking, okay, I'm going for the elite top step here, to I'm protecting my U23 jersey?
No, I don't think it ever switched. I mean, I was always racing for the elite U23. And few people have made comments that in the last 5Ks I was pulling to pull away from the group behind me. But I think that I would disagree, because I was pulling because the race was ahead of me. You know, there was a chance that we would catch them and then I'd be racing for the podium or even the win. So, of course, I was going to help.
Absolutely. And you were, because that group back together. Yeah. It was all one group that finished with Annemiek 1 second in front. And actually, one thing that I noticed, because when we were watching on the TV, Annemiek just came from behind, but the as they were coming back, you were the rider that was on Annemiek's wheel.
Yeah, exactly.
And so did you see her go then? And was it just a case of just simply not being able to respond? Because I guess everybody was absolutely maxed out at that point.
Yeah, I think this was probably one of my biggest regrets if I look back on the race. I mean, I was there with Annemiek and I absolutely saw her go. But I think it was the same situation as everybody in that group. I mean, we all saw her go and we all hesitated for a moment. And that was how we lost the race, you know. I mean, in my head, all I was thinking was Annemiek was not in the race today. You know, I'd never considered that Annemiek was in the race. I saw her working for her teammates early on in the race, and she had a broken elbow. I mean, it was quite a state to look at. Like, I never considered that she could potentially win. And I think that just shows perhaps my naivety, or I don't know, perhaps the fact that it's not over till the line, the absolute line, and Annemiek is, yeah, something special. And I think, yeah, I was just one of the many in that group that day that hesitated a moment too long. So, yeah, that's how you lose a race in the end, isn't it?
Yeah, but I guess at least you were the only one in that group that got a pretty good consolation prize.
But, yeah, exactly.
But I mean, after the finish, did you know straight away that you'd won the U23, or was it so hectic with everything coming back together that you maybe weren't even sure if another group had come back to you? Or, you know, how long was it until you really realised that actually, you know, you'd also won a rainbow jersey?
Well, I didn't think about it straight away. Obviously, as I just explained, the first sort of moment, even in the finishing straight, I already let myself just feel frustrated. And then as I crossed the line, I was like in absolute disbelief about what just happened. But then sort of when I came to a stop, I did look around me to the other girls that were also stopping, finishing with me. And yeah, I saw that I was the only under 23 there. My trade teammates, not my teammates on the day, came up to me and patted me on the back and said, "Oh, Neve, you've got a rainbow jersey." And yeah, so then I realised. But it was, yeah, it was not, yeah, there was a moment probably.
And then those feelings about the regret perhaps started to change, did they?
Yeah, exactly. I think any race you can have regrets and think about mistakes you made, but it's not every day you win a rainbow jersey. So when I stood on that podium, I just said to myself, just, yeah, put that all behind me and just, yeah, enjoy the moment of pulling on a rainbow jersey, because, yeah, it's not every day that happens.
Well, that was Neve Fisher-Black. And, of course, one of the really sad things about this is that she won't actually get to wear her under-23 rainbow jersey at any races, will she, Lizzie?
No, well, the only U23 women's race, and which is actually a new race on the calendar for next year, is the women's Tour Lavenir. But Neve won't be a U23 next year. She will be an elite, so she won't actually get to wear that, unfortunately. Just look at it on her bedroom wall.
Which is a nice thing to have on your bedroom wall, at least. But I kind of want to correct myself a little bit, because in the preview episode, I was almost questioning the point of having an under 23 jersey or category at all, if it was going to be the race within the race. And I guess, you know, sometimes it depends on who wins and all the rest of it. But this is huge for Neve Fisher-Black. It's absolutely huge. And it would be for anyone who won this category and this jersey, whether you get to wear the jersey or not, that will never be removed from your palmaris. And I think it's easy to overlook that whenever it's not been won in the same way. So you didn't have that same moment of glory crossing the line. And for Fisher-Black, she was frustrated first and then delighted that she'd won. But it's a huge accolade, and it's a huge mark of potential. And I think it is a good thing to have it. It's better to have it than not. Obviously, we'd all have to see the race separated, but I correct myself, because I kind of thought there wasn't much point to it. But now I see Neve Fisher-Black and the kind of rider she is and what this brings to her. And even the fact that her name is being mentioned, you know, a lot in cycling circles now, in a way that maybe people wouldn't have noticed her amongst other riders before. It's a big deal. So it is great for her.
And I think with that in mind, we should also give mention to Vittoria Guazzini, who was the U23 champion in the time trial with, let's be honest, an absolutely spectacular result. She was fourth, as you mentioned, earlier, Rose or Orla, I can't remember which one of you said, you know, she was the only other rider within a minute of Ellen van Dijk. And we're really witnessing there with Vittoria Guazzini a sort of coming of age. She had a critical role in the road race as well. She had a domestique role, but she worked so, so hard pulling the Italian team. And, you know, one of those moments where you just give everything and then you pull off and you literally come to a complete stop. And she was on Mount Pleasant, so she really did come to a complete stop. But she's had a great season after breaking her ankle in Paris-Roubaix last year. An amazing comeback, an amazing season. And I think to take that U23 jersey in the time trial is just a brilliant way to top off that season for her.
Yeah, and I'm so relieved that the winner of the under-23 title was someone who was going for the win of the elites, because, you know, and we were speculating, weren't we, about the at the road race, the British team fielded a very young team that they were, and they came away with Pfeiffer Georgie, obviously came second in the under-23, silver in the under-23 race. But I'm glad in a way that it didn't go for a team that was working solely for that under-23 title. Because I think if a lot of teams had done that, it really would have upset the dynamic of the race. But it does mean that, you mentioned Vittoria Guazzini, and that it's a shame that she would have just been not in contention for the under-23 title at all in the road race, because of her, she was in a team where they had champions going for the elite title. So it was just not possible for her to try her luck for the under-23 title. But we'll see what happens in the future. And we can just hope that they will have a separate under-23 race. But then it does leave a question mark, you know, who would do it? I don't know. You know, would you not just go for the elites anyway, especially when there's not an under-23, there's not a season of under-23 races in that exists for the female riders anyway at the moment?
I guess it's that argument, though, about it being a step up towards the elite, so that you've got that bridging period, if you like. You know, you've got the likes of Zoe Backstead, who's now just turned 18 and she's jumping straight into the elite ranks. Obviously, as you say, if they don't have the under-23 races anyway, then that's really where the problem lies. But yeah, the development of the under-23 category for the women has to be the next step, really. I think, as ever with the women's cycling, it's imperfect, but it's a start. So, you know, copy and paste ad infinitum, I think, across women's racing. Not perfect, but it's a start.
Well, we'll leave it there for our World Champs discussion. We'll be back next month, of course, where there'll be less racing to talk about, but a few transfers, riders retiring, and we've got people retiring and unretiring, don't we?
We do indeed. Well, of course, we first heard the rumblings of perhaps Mormon Passio unretiring, and then confirmed by her move to AG Insurance Next G. Now we've just had Marta Bastianelli confirmed as unretiring. She's continuing on with UAE Team ADQ for one more year. And now we're beginning to hear the rumblings of perhaps Annemiek van Vleuten unretiring. This is how it started with Mormon Passio. All my legs have been really good. I'm the best I've ever been. And so I think, especially with the Olympic year in 2024 and probably the Olympic road race, the one title that yet eludes Annemiek van Vleuten, we may see a change of thought over the next year. So that's going to be a really interesting story to see how that unfolds. But it's great. She's just getting better as she gets older. And I love the fact that there was a great sort of picture on Twitter side by side with Remco as a 23-year-old world champion and Annemiek van Vleuten, you know, nearly 40. So it just shows that nothing is impossible and age is definitely not a barrier to success.
I know, and everyone's saying how great Remco's achievements were. And, you know, there's Annemiek van Vleuten, who's effectively won three grand tours. I know they're not proper grand tours, but not all of them anyway. But to have won all three grand tours and to be the world champion is just...
With a broken elbow.
With a broken elbow, a bit. I have to say, I love all these unretirements. This is how I like to leave a party. Just one more dance. Just one more dance. Can't leave the fun.
Well, we'll have to see in a few months' time who does actually end up on the start line and who doesn't. But we'll have plenty to talk about next month. So thank you very much for your company, ladies. Thank you, Lizzie.
Cheers, Rose.
Oh God, no, we're being sucked back. It's going to just descend into a load of Vegemite stereotypes. Thank you, Orla. Let's get out of this as quickly as we can, I think, before it does.
Throw another shrimp on the barbie, mate. Thank you very much.
I'm watching our cycling podcast listenership figures plummet as I sit here. If you are still listening, particularly if you're Australian, then thank you for listening.
Sorry.
Sorry, and thank you for listening.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.